Good afternoon and welcome to this episode of the Black Tuesday Podcast with Biggs and Lance. Fresh off the thrilling FSU victory of Miami, you know as you love her, Florida State's greatest alum, Stephanie Lynn. Good afternoon, how are you?
I'm well. It snowed this weekend, but on the other side, I made an apple pie this morning, so
ooh,
a little bad,
okay.
A little good.
Now, before we delve into the news, let's discuss the aforementioned pie. Now,
okay.
What do you use for a top layer?
For apple pie, I just do a second crust. I used to do kind of a fancier crust, but now I just do just a plain old top crust. And crusts are difficult for me. I don't know why I can't get them to turn out, so I just get the ones from the freezer. But it's Gordon Ramsay's pie recipe.
So if you didn't do it right, the pie recipe would curse you out.
What is the correct top for an apple pie?
No, I mean, I'm more of the fan of the pie itself, so
yes.
Any top to me is good.
Oh, you mean like cheddar cheese versus ice cream?
Yes.
That kind of top? Oh. I will do, if the pie is warm, and this is my When Harry Met Sally moment, if the pie is warm, I will do a scoop of vanilla ice cream on the side. If the pie is not warm, I might put a little whipped cream, but otherwise I just go plain. I've never had a slice of cheese on my apple pie.
I had it either, and I don't think cheese and pie go together. People are like, well, apples and cheese are a snack. That's fine, but apple pie is a dessert. So get your nasty ass cheese off my goddamn dessert, unless it's
yes.
cream cheese or cheesecake.
Exactly. Now, cheesecake is the best of all worlds.
This is fair. It is. Speaking of, like this weekend, my girlfriend and I went to IHOP, and I had the New York cheesecake pancakes. And I'm sorry, they were phenomenal. I am. It just made me happy because it's snowed here and it didn't accumulate, but it sucked. Now, speaking of something that unfortunately accumulates, which is the amount of CNN bullshit, did you, by chance, I know this wasn't on the agenda, but did you catch the hit piece that was written on dissension within the Biden White House?
I did not, but I read a little bit about it. What's going on?
Now, basically, there are unnamed sources saying that people within Vice President Harris's camp were upset that she was named to head up all the foreign affairs and stuff like that. But yet, no one would put their names on it. But then mm-hmm. there was a retraction where CNN had to explain the full context of the quotes, and they look vastly different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, journalistically, as a journalist, is it because CNN is just, they don't have a plan post-Trump and they're just trying to get anybody to watch, to listen, or to view?
It does feel an awful lot like spitballing. We'll just throw anything at the wall and see what sticks. At the same time, who are they to pass up the opportunity for some misogynoir? You know, that's exactly what that's about. For them to put up a hit piece about the vice president, who did a great job on her trip to France, can I say. I don't know what the hit piece could be about. I don't know what the criticism is about or where it's coming from, but I do think that it detracts from the fact that they're about to put a puff piece about Chris Christie up. So they get us all wound up about one thing, and they just keep us whipped and in a frenzy.
Yep, this is the same man, Chris Christie, who shut down the busiest bridge, or an exit on the busiest mm-hmm. bridge in America because the Democratic mayor of Fort Lee, New Jersey, Mark Sokolich, I don't know why I remember his name, wouldn't endorse him for governor. He shut down a exit on the George Washington motherfucking bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And it is stunning that seeing him do this, but then again, it's not because look who runs it. Jeff Zucker is a Trump, he says himself, he is a fan and a friend of Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't be surprised, but it's the amount of like shit-givenness direct that passes from news is just ridiculous. And I'm at the point where all cable news is just, I'm kind of done. Like, I'm not kind of done. I am done. I can't because it is solely driven on not getting to a conclusion, not getting to a solution. Let's piss you off. let's make up shit to outrage you, to get you to watch and see how we handle it. It has become what, honestly, ESPN News has become to sports, where they'll make up a controversy and then they'll talk about it for 3 days.
Mm-hmm. No lies detected.
America is literally falling for the proverbial banana in the tailpipe.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think that CNN would be better, but they're not. They're the same as MSNBC. They're the same as Fox News. All three are the same. It's all three the same. Now, in funny news, well, this part is funny, but the crimes were not. Ghislaine Maxwell, a name we haven't heard in a while, her lawyers are afraid that a dummy jury might find her wholly unlikable. You'd think that somebody traffics in humans and for sex trafficking purposes would be an amenable character or affable character. Does her lawyer really understand that no matter what jury she's in, she's going to be hated?
I can't believe they're surprised. I mean, I would be really surprised if they found one person in the country who, one, you know, faced with these facts, would find her likable or would at least find her middle of the road. But when they put the stuff up there, plus the way that she carries herself, they really need to just plea at this point. They're not going to find an impartial jury. Everyone's going to just find that she is the trash that she is. And, you know, this reporting comes out of the Daily Mirror because they're very invested over it in the UK. They think it's, you know, entertaining trial stuff. You know, like, you know, sometimes trials come across, even when the crimes are abhorrent, the trial is interesting to watch. And they don't like her, and they didn't like her father. And so they're kind of enjoying the schadenfreude. So, you know, really, the best thing her lawyers can do is just plea out, because there's no way.
Like, no way. If she doesn't serve anything but 20 years,
mm-hmm.
minimum, they did wrong.
Needs a start there.
That's a good start. That should be the mandatory minimum for her creepy ass. And I just, apparently we're just going to get stuck in like the courtroom realm, because did you see where Kyle Rittenhouse was the charge, the gun charge was dropped by the judge?
That's ridiculous. It's one of, I mean, it was proved. There he is with an illegal gun. What's the drop? I could understand if it was like they decided they're going to pull out of trial and he's going to plea, and so they drop a gun charge because he's going to plea to, you know, first or second degree murder, whatever it is. But they're still in trial, and he just dismissed the charge. It's ridiculous. I don't know what the prosecutors are going to have to do to get all this. I don't know if appealed is the right word, but there's been so much judicial misconduct with this trial. It's ridiculous. But it's good that we're all seeing it. That's the upside of this, is there are two important trials going on right now about white men trying to get away with murder, literally. And it's out there for us to see, and we have to deal with it, and we have to recognize that this is how the system works. So when somebody wants to come up to us and, you know, scream about critical race theory in our head, in our face, you can be like, no, that's not what critical race theory is. But what it is this. It's this system. It's this judicial system. And that's what we're talking about when we say that we want to understand it. So I've got no time for this judge at all. He needs to have a ride to work with some very persuasive people that I know that could tell him why he's wrong about something.
Exactly. He ran unopposed.
Yeah.
Again.
I don't think he will again.
No, he needs to run completely opposed. And in my heart of hearts, I know he's going to walk. And just like you mentioned, just like with the Arbery decision, where you have Arbery case, where you have the defense saying that they want all the black preachers out of the courtroom.
Yeah.
Fuck these people. I mean, it is. Now, don't get me wrong. I am not the religious type. I have my own issues with, you know, the religious aspects and, you know, hand in the wallet type of thing. But for a defense lawyer just to come out and say that, you might as well just call these people to end and just be done. It is.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even fathom how fucked up this is.
Yeah. What needs to happen is, and it won't happen, but in an ideal world it would happen, where the courtroom is overflowing then with white ministers to say, we don't tolerate this behavior. This is unchristian. That's what needs to happen then in a response to, we need these black preachers out of here. Well, let's bring in the, what you find acceptable, white preachers who are going to say the same thing, but they're not there.
That's the part that's strange to me. And that's the part that, you know, it is indicative of where we are as a society, and the people defending it are trash. And the only good part about all of these cases, folks are telling on themselves, and I'm here for it. Please, continue telling yourself and continue to self-snitch. But that's what the world needs, you to tell on yourself and act like a complete douchebag. Now, we come back from break. We got to talk about, actually, believe it or not, happy news. We're actually going to spice the Monday with some happiness. You are listening to the Black Tuesday podcast with Biggs and Lins on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Black Tuesday podcast with Biggs and Lins. I'm Biggs. She is Lins. Stephanie Beto O'Rourke is running for governor of Texas. We have a few questions for you. One, what do you think spurred this? Two, what are his chances?
Well, second question first. I think his chances are good because I think he is liked. And I say this as a non-Texan, so maybe there are Texans out there who can correct us on this. But I think that people like him. And the thing is that since he lost the last election that he really scared some people on the right about, he's been putting in the work. He has not stepped out of the public eye, but what he's doing is bettering his community as he's doing it, and it just so happens to be Beto O'Rourke. So I think that's important, and I think that's important to Democrats going forward, is we can't just, you know, speak out with messaging every 4 years or every 2 years. We have to constantly stay working, constantly stay positive, and keep the messaging going, and that's something that he did. And for your first question, it's not surprising to me. I think he's always been running for senator slash governor. I think he's the right kind of person. He does seem to have a sense of civic duty and responsibility. He seems to be genuine in wanting to make the world a better place. So it doesn't really surprise me that he'd run for governor. Why he's announcing now, I'm not sure. I guess we're a year out from when he would be elected. So that's probably what it is. Probably he was waiting for either this time of year or knowing that the Build Back Better is probably going to get signed this week. You know, more good news for Democrats. Let's keep pushing forward. And it didn't distract from elections that just happened. So, you know, it's kind of that sweet spot between elections and Thanksgiving where it's a good time to announce. So it seems to me that he's very savvy and his team is very savvy. So I'm interested going forward what their messaging is going to be like. So I want to see it as kind of a template for how Democrats are going to work in the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years, what the short, you know, change is going to be. But it does seem like a change is going to come, you know.
I want an aggressive approach. Mm-hmm. I don't want meek. I don't want, well, guys, you know, we're going to show up out here. We're going to put our pads on, put our cleats on. We're going to go compete. No. I want everybody out there going just focused and disciplined, but going hard at the Republicans, because the Republicans, if they do nothing well, one thing they do, they give the Democrats ample fodder for campaign ads, for talking points, for debate points. They have a reservoir of fuckery that they have unleashed upon America that is right there. You don't have to think too hard. You don't have to game plan or brainstorm. It is right in front of you. Take this opportunity. Beat them with their own words, and they will stop fucking around if they don't have seats. And it is, I'm for it. Like, I am for Beto trying it, because winning Texas would signify a monster change. It would be a monster seat change. Like, I think the last Democratic governor was Ann Richards.
I think so.
And that would say a lot. That would speak to a shift, like you mentioned, the giant change. Now, one of the things that we also got to discuss is the Biden accomplishments. Now, I'm asking you this because you're an independent, like right down the middle. You are a decisive independent. You're not undecided. You always know who you're going to vote for after research, but you are a decisive independent. What have you seen from the independent view that you have liked about the first 9 months of the Biden administration?
Well, I always say this, and it kind of throws people, but then there's more to it than this. I always say that I'm an economic conservative. I say that because I want to see something for my money. And what I'm going to see for my money is educated children and parents who are able to work outside the home because their child care is covered. I'm going to see investments in transportation and our infrastructure. That's, I think, being economically conservative. You want something for your money. Giving tax cuts to millionaires doesn't give me anything for my tax money. Fixing the bridge outside my house, that gives me something for my money. Educating the kids who live in my school district, that gives me something for my money. So I find the whole Build Back Better bill amazing. And that he did it this quickly, I want to say it's shocking, but at the same time, this is a politician who knows how to get things done. He's already familiar with the system. He knows people. He knows how to finesse. He can get shit done. And that's the reason that I voted for him, is because I knew that he'd be able to get shit done without drama. And, all the drama is coming from the outside. There's no Biden drama. There's no Harris drama. And that's why CNN has to make shit up, you know? So we're pulled out of Afghanistan. We're going to invest in our own people. We've got shots in arms. We're back to school. And child poverty has been cut by almost half. The stock market is soaring. People are employed again. I don't know where to even end with all the accomplishments he's had, and it hasn't even been a year yet. I think it's incredible, and I think that we need to be shouting it from the rooftops.
For me, I am actually low-key surprised that it was this effective, this fast, and this clean. Like, yes, there were ups and downs and there were pitfalls, but they're getting through the majority of things that they push for, and they're keeping campaign promises. And it is stunning to see the Democratic Party actually, like, say, hey, this is what we're going to do. And they had to twist arms. They had to use a Republican term, is twisting of arms, and to get certain things done. Even with the own party, they have said, hey, this is not what we're finna do. Now, when we come back, we're gonna apparently keep the happy news going. This is one of the most feel-good episodes of the Black Tuesday podcast with Vince and Linda we have had in a long time. We'll be right We are back with another episode of the Black Tuesday podcast, Days and Lands. We need to talk about Marvel. As far as there was, I think it was a Zoom, and I want to get the man's name right, but there was a Zoom with, just double check, MCU VP of Development Nate Moore. And he said that he talked with the director of Black Panther, Ryan Coogler, and about recasting, if they would recast T'Challa. And he said, we just couldn't do it. So, I mean, as a Marvel fan, just as a cinephile, that's a pretty big compliment to, after one movie and being in two, that that character's permanently retired.
Yeah, it's a testament to his talent. I'm kind of two minds about this. I completely understand where people are coming from when they say it can be recast. But we're not talking about a Terrence Howard being recast with Don Cheadle kind of thing. We're talking about T'Challa. We're not talking about the Black Panther. Like, the Black Panther is a mantle that one assumes. T'Chaka had it. Then T'Challa has it. Who will have it next? The Black Panther can continue, but to recast the character of T'Challa, I think, is asking a lot of fans who are still dealing with the loss of Chadwick Boseman, and for his co-stars and all the other people who worked with him. You know, it's they say, you know, oh, they recast Superman, they recast Batman all the time. That's different. Those are different outings. For another Black Panther movie to be made with a different T'Challa, I think there would be too much distraction, too much backlash even. I don't think you could have another T'Challa, and I don't think you could have had a better T'Challa than the one that we were given. But a new Black Panther, yeah, we can go there. The comics went there, so why not?
I agree with the new Black Panther, and I also agree with the retiring of the T'Challa character, because it's funny you mention that my son and I, he had a day off, so we're watching the movie on Friday. He had never seen it. Now, he had seen parts of it. He had seen the Black Panther cartoons, so he was just in it. He's five, so he's excited. So when you see Chadwick Boseman come on screen the first time, I'm sitting there, I'm like, I'm literally tearing up. I'm like, I'm sad.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm sitting there, like, watching it, and he's digging it. He's like, oh, my gosh, this is the greatest thing in the world. He's, like, fixated. He's, like, just loving everything as far as the action. I'm like, sitting there just trying not to bawl, because I'm like, the significance of that movie meant so much to the community, where one of us is a superhero. Not a sidekick, not comic relief, the main guy, the one. And it spoke a lot. And I'm glad that they decided to retire it. Now, I guess, you know, what the happen is that former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson negotiated a release of a journalist in Myanmar. I didn't think that we still had to, you know, I thought that, you know, that diplomacy with some of the, not smaller countries, but other countries were at the point where it was helpful. He negotiated somebody's release. Now, here's the thing. As a veteran journalist, did you ever think about wanting to work overseas, and did something like this, the thought of it ever dissuade you from it?
I think maybe it might be different for me as a woman. Like, I don't know that I'd be comfortable going to a place like Myanmar, or, you know, like, say the Middle East or something like that. I don't know that I would feel comfortable working in a bureau like that. But I do think at the same time there is a certain level of insularity for journalists who work, like, say, for a big bureau. Like, say you work for CBS and you're covering Middle Eastern, you know, foreign affairs or something. You might have some kind of a buffer there. But this is just a guy who was running an independent newspaper about Myanmar. They had a coup there that overthrew their democratically elected government, and they took this guy into custody, and they were going to give him 11 years of hard labor just for running a newspaper and for telling the facts about what happened. So meanwhile, you know, here we had a government for 4 years that was basically threatening our media as well. So if we can recognize that it was wrong to put this American journalist into prison for reporting, we can also recognize that it was wrong for our former president to put a target on the backs of journalists here. He was basically doing the same thing, and people were getting death threats, and now you can see the reporting that's coming out. Things changed in the last 4 years about how reporting was done. So I don't even know if I'd be comfortable as a reporter in my own country right now, because I'd say that, you know, I used to cover school board meetings all the time. Say I covered a school board meeting and somebody didn't like that I reported what actually happened at it, you know, next thing I know, I get a mysterious package or somebody shows up to my office. You know, it happened enough when I covered regular, boring school board meetings to do it now. I don't know that I would want to be in that position.
I don't think I would. Like,
yeah.
Even if I was, like, younger, single, childless,
mm-hmm.
Because you can't trust, especially being in a foreign country where you, as an American, some of these countries don't like Americans to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I kind of wonder what goes through the guy's mind. The guy's name is Brian Fenster. I kind of wonder, would he ever go back to overseas reporting. I don't think I could.
I don't know that I would do it there. I might still report on things. Like, he might still report on Myanmar, but he might do it from, you know, like his home in New Jersey or something. I don't know where he's from. But, you know, you can still do reporting. It's just you can't do the same kind of reporting. And it just, him being thrown into jail for this tells me how important it is that he keeps reporting, or that someone keeps reporting on Myanmar.
I agree. Now, we actually have happy news.
Happy news?
Seriously, like,
you're spoiling us today.
What the hell has become up with people? Good Lord.
yeah, that was the first concert I ever went to.
See, that's called a callback. Now, Ji Young is the first Asian American Muppet.
Mm-hmm.
And I fucking love this. Like, the Muppets have always tended to get this right. Like, I know they have a neurodivergent Muppet.
Mm-hmm.
They have black Muppets. They have white Muppets. They have Latino Muppets. They have an Asian Muppet.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yes.
Not just Asian. She's specifically Korean-American. The creator is the puppeteer, who's a Korean-American. And she said, I wanted her to not just be, like, lumped in as Asian-American. I want to be really clear. She's a Korean-American Muppet because she's not, you know, Sub-Saharan Indian. She's not Chinese. She's not Japanese. She's Korean-American. So I think that's really interesting. And I the design of the puppet is beautiful, too.
Just happiness. Like, it is – it's a good goddamn day. Like, when you just see the, you know, just the – there's a picture on ABC News, their Twitter. It's a picture of G and Ernie.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I don't know. It's that little part of me that's like, you know, when the kid is like, you know what? Sesame Street, they've been around forever. They have helped so many kids. They have been there for so many children.
Yep.
The representation matters. Anyone who doesn't tell you the representation matters is a fuckhead and probably uses a hard R when black folks are around. I can't go into, but it's just more of like seeing how this is a big move, and it's an outstanding move. Now, with all the good news, we can't keep the good news train rolling continuously. So we got to talk about, when we come back, we got to talk about Cuba. Now, this is when we stop back in. You are listening to the Black Tuesday podcast with Biggs and Lens on the Full Press Coverage Radio Network. We are back with the Black Tuesday podcast with Biggs and Lens. She is Lens. I am Biggs. We apparently there are planned protests, and there is condemnation of Cuba for intimidation of head of the planned protests. How has Cuba managed to survive all these years without kind of being like the, not only, but being an island unto itself? Yes, they get aid from Russia, but they're kind of, you know, they're kind of doing their own thing. How has the government managed to keep that stranglehold for this long, even though the Castro brothers are, you know, not really the ruling party, I don't think.
I think, like, when it comes to terms of economics, I think it's easier to pull off communism over a smaller amount of land. And I think that's why communism in the Soviet Union and Russia is not as successful is the word, but it doesn't really work there. And it seems to have, up to a certain point, worked for Cuba. And I think it's just a case of one person in charge. You stay on an island. You don't have people walking back and forth across your border. So it kind of, in that way, it hung on. And, you know, some communists or people that are, you know, not necessarily opposed to communism will point to Cuba as an example. But at the same time, they're driving cars from the 1950s, and it looks like a time capsule there. So, sure, communism works, in quotes, if that's what you want it to be. So I guess that might be what it is. But Cuba is kind of isolated in that way. It's surrounded by non-communist countries that weren't doing any business with them for a long time. So, you know, this this awakening in Belarus and in Russia. I'm wondering if some of that is going to come to Cuba now. It kind of gives me pause. But I'm also curious about, Trump undid some of the door opening that Obama did in Cuba. How much of that door is going to get reopened?
You would hope that a lot of it gets real because it's a necessity. You have a large Cuban American population in South Florida where those are folks who made that 60-mile shark-infested water trip for a better life. And I'm looking at the 2019 Cuban, the Constitution. Now, bear in mind, there's still a Marxist within the state, but this is what the Constitution says. They recognize private property under heavy regulation. They restore the positions of president and prime minister, separate from president of council and state of ministers. They acknowledge climate change. They created two consecutive five-year terms for the president. They define marriage as a social and legal institution, and one of family organization, formally included legalization of same-sex marriage. They ban discrimination based on gender, race, ethnic origin, sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability. Restoration of presumption of innocence, since they actually brought that back. Now, this is still a communist state. Do you think in the next 20 years that communism in Cuba will dissipate?
I do, and that's just based on what I know economically of communism. Communism can't hold. It's just a bad economic system. It doesn't work out. Basically, it's like the state owns everything. The state employs you, and the idea is supposed to be that that's supposed to give you comfort and stability. If the state decides you work in, a peanut factory, then that's where you work, making peanuts all day. If the government decides that you're going to, weave fabric or whatever it may be, that's what you do. And, your housing subsidized and stuff like that. And some of it sounds like, hey, that could work. But in general, it falls apart by its nature, by what it is. Socialism and capitalism work better. And I think as those economic systems leak in a little bit and change Cuba for the better, I think people will eventually abandon communism. But I do think that the state will continue to own the businesses and own the housing and the whole nine yards because that's what they're standing on. But I think maybe within our lifetime, it won't be a communist country anymore. China, I think they'll stay, and I think Russia will stay.
I
But
agree.
I don't know that Cuba will be able to hold on its own in the Western Hemisphere.
I also agree with now. Today, we honored Steve Irwin, and his daughter posted a fantastic picture of the two of them. Steve Irwin, from everything, from what little I do know, seemed like a decent fellow and seemed like he really cared about the environment. What did you take from his career?
As someone who has, honest to goodness, ophidiophobia, fear of snakes, I watch Crocodile Hunter all the time. There's no way I could do anything remotely like what he did. My Crocodile Hunter impression is, and I'm not going to do the Australian accent, but it's the world's most dangerous snake, and I'm going to poke it with a stick. But the thing is about Steve Irwin is he's primarily an educator. And the fact that we all value him and his legacy speaks to how important educators are to us, be they, the people on TV like Bob Ross teaching us how to paint, Steve Irwin helping us find beauty in things that people tend to not find beautiful. That's where our values tend to lie as a society. So I think that, if we remember Steve Irwin as, this great zoologist, biologist who tried to show us beauty in the world we live in. And I've never heard anything bad about the man. So it's one of those unproblematic celebrities, and no one's ever come forward to say a bad word about him. So just, more power to him in his memory, and it's beautiful that his legacy is one of preservation and conservation.
I looked at the fiction. I remember the episodes. I'm just like, you know, this is a generally caring human being who cared for animals of all shapes, sizes, and colors and provided a common service. When I was a kid, we had Mutual of Omaha. We had Marlin Perkins. And
Yeah, I'll join Jim down at the alligator pond later. He would never
yes.
go. He'd send Jim.
No, Jim would be, Marlin would sit in the studio.
Yeah.
And Jim would be, yeah, I'm about to put my hand in the alligator's mouth. What the fuck are you, Marlin? Now,
One of the
but.
only shows that our family sits down and watches every week is Nature on PBS on Wednesday nights.
It's a good show. And it's
It's been
informative.
on forever.
My little boy is 5. He wants to be a zoologist. You know,
Oh.
he wants to rock the khaki with the hiking boot shorts. You know, he
Why
wants to be
not?
that guy. And I'm like, you know what? Dream big. And somebody like Steve Irwin allowed people to do it. He allowed people to have that thought, that hope, that wish, that dream. And you love it. Now, again, with the happy, today is the start of Trans Awareness Week. And, you know, it's funny to me where there are members of the trans community all over the world. These folks have been through a lot of shit. They continue to endure a lot of shit. I literally don't know how they do it, but I respect them for what they do, not for what they have endured, and the fact that they fight for each other, they fight for inclusion, they fight for a seat at the table. When you see the slow starting to embrace more of the trans community, what do you think? Like, did you ever think we'd get to this point?
Yeah, I mean, the more people we can love, the better. The less discrimination we have, the better. When I was in college, and maybe you can attest to this too, the gay organizations on campus didn't have a T in them. One place I went, it was called Gala, and the other one I think was called something like Logo. It was just lesbian gay. They didn't even have the B for bi yet in their acronyms. But now we have LGBTQIA plus. So everybody's welcome. It's a big tent. Acceptance and love is a big tent that we can all sit under. One of the things about this week, there's also Transgender Day of Remembrance. That's on the 20th. But one of the things I'm finding interesting is that this year for Trans Awareness Week is it's not just about talking about, there was a story I read recently about a trans woman who was misgendered and put into the wrong prison, and now she's suing because of the injuries that she had when she was incarcerated with people of the wrong gender. I can read stories like that, and I feel for her, and I'm trying to educate myself. But at the same time, if you look on social media, there's a lot of trans joy out there. There's a lot of people who are like, I'm not closeted anymore. I'm presenting how I want to present. I don't have to pass as one gender or the other. I can just be who I am. And I think that's something that I know I'm going to look forward to seeing all this week, is a lot of that trans pride and trans happiness and trans joy.
For me, it is like I use the plate analogy that I was using with grandma when she found out that a family member who came out. Are you happy? Are you full? Do you get enough to eat? Basically, yes, we accept you, you know, it's love. Sit down, have a plate, enjoy yourself. So for those in the trans community, hey, I mean, there's a lot of work for those of us outside of the community to do to help y'all. Reach out. I mean, it's, you know, it get on us if there's something that's not being said or being incorrectly said. We, the rational we, are gonna listen. Now, speaking of rational, apparently at 81 years old, Senator Leahy of Vermont is going to retire. What do you think happens with his seat?
Well, seeing as the junior senator from Vermont is an independent, I hope that they don't get another junior senator who's an independent. I hope they get some, you know, it's New England. I hope they get somebody who's a Democrat who's younger, you know, not in his 80s or her 80s or their 80s. And, you know, someone who believes in left principles and is willing to stand up for them. You know, I don't think that Bernie's a bad guy, but, you know, Patrick Leahy has done a lot of legislation over the decades that he's been in office. You know, his shoes are going to be difficult to fill. So I'm hopeful that Vermonters will pick someone who actually has a D behind his name or her name or their name. But, you know, you never know. It's a little bit weird in New England anymore. New Hampshire and Vermont, there's some strange things happening there. But hopefully it shouldn't be too much of a contest. Whoever runs should be able to get themselves in that seat. But I think it's interesting, and I've always found this interesting, that the junior senator is Bernie.
Yes. Bernie sits at the kids' table, the very old kids' table.
And Patrick Leahy is my favorite senator. I have to throw that out there, so I don't know what I'm going to do now.
Because he's, well, let's see.
He's a Batman guy. That's why he's my favorite. He's in Dark Knight, for God's sake.
He is. I'm just thinking of who'd be, I don't know. Do I have one? I don't like Cory. Yeah, Cory Booker's okay. He comes off as, sometimes he's a little, like a tryhard.
Lindsay Hirano would be up there.
Yes, because she just, so, you know what? She just used the word bullshit on TV. She does not care.
She does. So, yeah. If I can go from a Batman-loving senator who once says bullshit on TV, that sounds about right.
Yes.
To me.
I think Senator Hirono is it. Senator Duckworth.
Yeah.
Ooh, damn. I'm thinking I'm close. Oh.
Yeah, it's tough. We're going to have to make a list on our own.
Honestly, one of the quiet ones, Patty Murray, just shows it does her job.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't pick Patty Murray out of a lineup. I don't know what she. I barely know what she looks like. I just know she does work. Mm-hmm. Her, Ron Wyden.
Sheldon Whitehouse is another one of my favorites.
Yes, from Rhode Island. Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to hear him talk. He really lays it out sometimes. He pulls no punches when he's on a roll.
But Sherrod Brown also. Sherrod Brown kind of reminds me of a neighbor who will sit there. He'll stand at the fence that separates your yard from his. You know, he'll talk about the Browns and he'll talk about the winter and, you know, how he'll just converse and he's cool and his wife will bring over like baked goods and he'll bring over like liquor.
Hey, like, you know, baked goods and liquor. That's my idea of a party.
You know what? That should be my college band name, baked goods and liquor. But I mean,
did you know that Senator Leahy used a Batman comic to end the export of landmines?
No.
He, in the 90s, like the early, I think early, maybe mid-90s, he wrote a letter that appeared in a Batman comic book about landmines and why they're bad and why he introduced this legislation to stop exporting them. And nobody would listen to him when he would talk about it. But then he found this comic on his colleagues' desks, and they're like, you know, this thing in this Batman comic, that's pretty right. The legislation passed 100-0. And it was because of the comic book. He also is the sponsor of the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. So,
I mean, he's a legendary senator who actually is up on comics. Now,
mm-hmm.
our
got
last topic.
Done.
Got shit done. Our last topic is funny, but it's kind of gross. So, if you have a weak constitution, still listen. I'm just going to just tell you a weak constitution. We're talking about chitlins. Now, here's the thing. I grew up in Connecticut. I am the grandson of Southerners, cousin of Southerners, friends all down south. I've had chitlins as a child because I was taught the rule, if you try it once and you don't like it, you can say you don't like it. I tried it once. I wanted to cut my tongue out.
Mm-hmm.
For those who are melanin challenge or who don't have the soul cooking aspect, explain what chitlins are.
I get to explain chitlins. Chitlins are basically intestines. And from my personal experience, from what I know from friends and stuff, is they tend to get fried up. but I guess there's different ways you can prepare them. And I've never tasted, I could never get as far as tasting them. I've eaten a lot of stuff. Like we've said on here before, I'll eat haggis plate after plate, but I can't deal with chitlins. And the reason that I found this is because the Kitchenista, and if you don't follow her, get her macaroni and cheese recipe for the holidays, is because she found this place that their slogan is, "We clean the shit out of chitlins," which is a great slogan. And it's a place in Detroit. But the thing about chitlins is, I don't care how much you clean them, it's still intestines, and they still have that smell. And then you heat that up and just forget about it. I've worked in places where people have brought leftover chitlins and cooked them in the microwave.
And oh, God.
Run screaming. You want to run screaming from the place. And no. You know, the people who are eating it think it's hilarious. And it's like, you know, well, yeah, there's the part of me that's melanin challenge that's run down here, but there's a part of me that just can smell. I can't do it. It's one of those things that if somebody clean, I'd like to know if they clean these up as clean as they can be, do they still have that smell?
Yes. Yes, you do.
They
yes.
have to because of the nature of what they are.
They're
so
intestines
how have you known chitlins to be prepared?
Oh, God. It is.
Just fry them up cold. Or?
Like, I've heard fried.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is.
And they look terrible, too. It's not like they look good. They look gray every time I've seen them.
They look like English buildings. I mean, it is. Some people put them in salt water, then vinegar. I mean, it is. It's a lot. There's a video, and I just. People use lemon to kill the smell. Honestly, there are not enough lemon trees in the fucking world. And people are like, well, they're good for you. They have B12, phosphorus, and zinc. You know what? So does a goddamn Centrum tablet. Why don't you take one of those and not have shit running up your nose and your mouth? No, it is. I mean, people will fry them, as you know. They will cook them in like a stewish type thing.
Okay.
There's pork, there's beef. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, fuck that. I would just rather be vegan. I'm sorry, but no. I'm like, people are like, oh, you know, it's a good source of vitamins. No, it's gross. Like I have good friends down in Mississippi who they give me shit because I'm a northerner and they think that my taste in food is different because I don't eat chitlins. I don't eat pig's feet. I'm sorry. A pig roots around in shit. I'm not eating anything's foot.
Mm-hmm.
I'll eat the shit. Huh?
I was going to say, many, many times growing up in the South, you go into like a little grocery store or something like that, and there was a jar of pickled pig's feet sitting usually by the register.
Yes.
So, you, I mean, like it's an impulse buy. Like, I think I'll get a Snickers and this bottle of Coke and, oh, throw pig's foot in. No.
I've been in line.
Pig's feet never moved.
No.
They were the same pig's feet for years.
I've been in line behind people who will sit there and order the same thing. Like, I'll have what the hell was I? Was I in Florida? I was in what town?
It was crazy. Oh, no. It was probably Florida.
It was in, Homestead.
That's
Homestead, Florida.
Down.
And there was like a convenience store. This was forever ago. And guys like, you know, this is candy, cigarettes. I'll take 10 on whatever pump that was. And let me get a couple of those pig's feet. You see the jar open, go, whoosh, and you see the little tongs, and
mm-hmm.
you eat them on the way out. I'm like, you nasty motherfucker, what are you doing?
Oh, I'm just having the biggest wave of nostalgia right now.
Literally, just sitting there like...
One place I could think of, it was just like they had this. It was a huge jar.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the back, you know, not behind the register where it would be a decent place, but right in the front where it's like right in your grill.
Right eye level. Like,
yeah.
It is a jar. It had to be honestly like half gallon or to a gallon.
Oh, this was like a 2 gallon jar. This was a huge thing. It was
huge.
Bigger than
you
your head.
These feet just kind of like, it was like dangling.
There's still hair on the feet.
Yeah, the guy like tongs, and he like wraps them up in like a paper towel. And the guy's eating on the way out of the store. I'm like, dude, who, what? The entire fuck. Nasty bastard. What?
I hope and no one decided to sit down with the podcast while they're having dinner.
Seriously. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, I didn't even want to put my money on the counter because at first there's like pig feet drippings on a goddamn counter. I'm like, why don't you clean that off, dude?
Oh, the drippings is the best part.
Wilbur sat there with his foot in shit for the better part of 17 years, and you want to just have his foot just dangle in midair. Man, no. Gross bastard. Now, how can people interact with you on social media?
Oh, my God. Don't send me pictures of chitlins and pigs. At my handle, Edenza, E-D-E-N-Z-A.
You can find me at TV Sekila. You can find this podcast wherever quality podcasts are found. This has been another episode of the Black Tuesday Podcast with Biggs and Lane. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. Force feed Ted Cruz pig feet. Fuck 'em.